Okay, so at Rutgers we've been working on a lot of different new physics searches and also on some of the standard model Higgs searches. And this year these two things have converged, and so now we're combining the two. And there's lots of things I could tell you about. The things I will tell you about, I had lots of help from my colleagues at Rutgers, and also I'll show you some CMS results if there's time. But based on the discussions and some of the questions that came up last week, I just picked picked some topics I thought people might be interested in at some level. And so I guess there's no way I have enough time to cover all these, so I'll skip things as I go. But I'll talk a little bit about searching for the second Higgs doublet and the standard model channels and new channels, and some just show you some numerics about making use of some of the rate measurements, and also, if there's time, the possibility of measuring time reversal violation in the Higgs to 4 lepton mode, and also tell you about some things that are going on in using the Higgs to search for new physics, and also Higgs's from in cascade decays from supersymmetry. Okay, so first topic, the Higgs rate measurements. So the experiments are making very nice measurements of Higgs in various combinations of initial and final states. And as a theorist, well, so there's no definitive deviation, of course, yet in any of the measurements. But if there was some deep pattern of deviation, that might be hints for new physics that we're modifying the Higgs boson couplings. So there's two general ways to approach this. One is to make some look at some specific theoretical framework and then see how any possible deviations might fit into that, or to do an effective operator analysis. And so I'll mention both during the talk. And by definition, any deviation at discovery level that could be established is large by definition. And so one thing we looked at were two Higgs doublet models, and there, since the Higgs has the quantum numbers of the vacuum, if there's any other scalar in the Higgs sector that also has the quantum numbers of the vacuum, there's nothing that forbids it from mixing. So for example, in two Higgs doublets, a capital H mixes with a little h. And if the mixing were significant, that could in principle make large modifications, or order one even modifications of the little h couplings. So just to parameterize this, we looked at different discrete models. So there are four discrete types of two Higgs doublet models that satisfy the Glashow-Weinberg condition for the absence of tree-level flavor-changing neutral currents. And within each of those, then the couplings to all the tree-level couplings are all fixed. And as far as the little h coupling, then it's completely parameterized for this in the standard channels in terms of just two parameters: the little h capital H mixing and the tan beta, the ratio of the expectation values. Now, there's all kind of correlations that occur in different measurements, and so I won't subject you to all those. You can look in our paper if you want to see what correlations are. As I say, it's a little too early maybe to try to be chasing down if this channel's high and that one's low. Is that more like type 1 or type 3 or so forth? So you can amuse yourself with the plots in our paper. But the one thing I will mention that sort of came up last week was just the impact of the current Higgs measurements with the measurements that are just starting to look for the extra Higgses in the standard channels. So here I just took from the CMS HCP results, just the coupling. I don't have anything to show you yet for global fits to two Higgs doublet models, so I just took the coupling to VV from the global fits from HCP, and in this tan beta sine alpha plane. So the dark and light gray are the 1 and 2 sigma allowed regions. And so as time goes on, if the couplings improve, then it'll collapse down to this dark line, which is the alignment limit where the two Higgs expectation values line up with the little Higgs direction in the mass eigenstates. So that's one way to look for deviations in the little Higgs coupling. Another thing to do to look for extra scalars is in the same standard channels, for example, VV and gamma-gamma, to look for the existence of the extra Higgs bosons. And these are probably the two best channels to look for extra Higgses. So VV, Again, in the two Higgs doublet model, the heavy Higgs scalar that doesn't carry any quantum numbers can mix with the Higgs, so it can decay to the WW and ZZ final state. And then capital H and A can also decay to gamma gamma. So one can ask, how do these two types of measurements, namely making measurements of the little h standard model-like coupling, compare with the searches for the extra Higgs in these standard channels? And so far, there's only been one result output by the collaborations based on these considerations. And that is, as you saw last week, looking for, taking the Higgs to WW channel, taking the observations, removing a standard model Higgs with unit strength at 126, and then getting a bound on the cross-section times branching ratio to another scalar, H, that decays to WW as a function of the capital Higgs mass. And so those are the results. So it's a little bit better than the picobarn. It's at the fraction of picobarn level. And so one can take this and try to compare with how it compares to the measurements on the standard model Higgs that I showed in the previous plot. So now what I'm doing is not quite correct, because what was done experimentally in the FITS is to take out the little Higgs at full strength. And of course, if it was mixing, it wouldn't be there in full strength. But just to illustrate the magnitude, here I've taken at 160 GeV, where the bound is best, and converted this in this tan beta sine alpha plane, what would be excluded. Again, this is not quite correct, because what's been taken out is the full strength, but just to set the scale. So these regions on the outside here are where the capital H, so way out here in the edges, capital H is the standard model Higgs, essentially. It couples like the standard model Higgs. So it has to have large mixing to show up here. And so these regions are ruled out. This is in type 2. And there's type 1 also. So it depends on a little bit on the type. And as you can see, just comparing these for the moment, the little h measurements give a better bound in this two Higgs doublet model than the direct measurements. And so it'll be interesting to see in the future how these two complement each other. Okay, second. Yeah. So this is excluded based on that plot. This is again assuming 160. That was the best point. And so from this measurement at 160, the capital H could not be mixing nearly maximally with little h. And so then this region's ruled out. And then just for comparison, this is the allowed, this is excluded and this is allowed. So this is allowed from the little h measurement. Okay. Yeah?
Just a general question. For the general two Higgs doublet model studies, not two Higgs, all these analyses are done tree level, right?
Well, let's see. So the collaborations haven't yet done a fit in the two Higgs doublet model parameter space. So we're discussing about what the most efficient way to do that is. But in the things we did, we included it's the full two Higgs doublet model with tree level modifications of the couplings. But that affects the gamma gamma and glu glu rate and so forth. So that's. Right, so in the standard two Higgs doublet model, it's not even close to being important, but that could be done if one wanted to take really seriously any of the type models, and it's just a standard model with an extra doublet, and that could all be put in. That's not done yet, yeah. Okay, the other place in the standard model channels that are best to look for an extra Higgs is gamma-gamma, and so here is an illustration. We plotted the cross-section times branching ratio of A to gamma-gamma at 8 TeV as a function of the MA mass and tan beta. And this is in the alignment limit. It doesn't make a lot of difference. And these contours are in cross-sections in femtobarns. And for reference, the standard model, sigma times BR, H to gamma-gamma, is about 45. So that's just for reference. That's this line here. So if MA were in this range and tan beta were this low, there would be another bump in the spectrum already someplace below twice the top threshold. that you could see by eye by now, probably. Okay. Unless it was degenerate, oh, and then that might be. Then it would be twice as big. Right. So if this were 126 and it were A, it would be. So it would be consistent with that. Yes. And I think you might tell us about that later. And the okay. So that's it's model dependent. What the cross? What the feature is, the main feature here is twice the top threshold. So once you get beyond twice the top threshold, anything in the Higgs sector likes to couple to dt bar. So the prime hunting ground for extra resonances in a diphoton is below twice the top mass. Oops. Okay, so now it's been a little bit more difficult than you might have guessed to try to get the search done out to at least twice the top mass to extend the range. There have been searches for higher mass diphoton resonances, and originally in the standard model search, rightly so, the emphasis has been on the low mass region. And so this will be now extended over the whole range, and eventually there'll be results for sigma dot BR into extra resonances in the diphoton. And so that will be a very nice probe of multi-Higgs models, and the experiments have these beautiful electromagnetic calorimeters. They should be using them to look for extra bumps in the diphoton spectrum, and that will happen eventually. Those interpretations will happen. Well, modeling the background, there's not a physics model of the background. It's just a parameterized fit. And if you do the parameterized fit in a rational way, there's no problem extending it. If you just keep using a higher and higher order polynomial, that's not quite rational. So that needs to not be done, but it'll be done. That's just a small technical problem. Okay, next subject is multi-lepton searches. And so these are extremely sensitive probes for new physics and hadron colliders because leptons are precious objects. The way they're done now in CMS is that we break things up into all possible flavor and charge combinations of two or more leptons, including taus. The reason we do that is the backgrounds in the different charge and flavor combinations vary over orders and orders of magnitude. So for example, four leptons, all of the same charge, there's no background to that of high PT leptons. And there's an enormous hierarchy of different types of the magnitude of different backgrounds. We also break things up in terms of blunt kinematic variables like HT, MET, ST, LT, so forth. We use B tags, so we have categories with and without B tags. We're now adding categories with and without jets. We also use kinematic discriminants within certain categories where to separate them from standard model backgrounds. And there's a lot more kinematic discriminants we use internally to look for new physics signatures also. And the events are put into all these different channels. They're organized hierarchically from lowest background at the top to highest background at the bottom. And so an event, you just ask whether it falls in each bin. And so it has a chance to fall in the lowest possible bin. So that maximizes sensitivity. So there are hundreds of these channels. And it's a very difficult experiment because you need to have control over the backgrounds and all the channels. You need to understand all the fake rates and all the channels. So it's like trying to do hundreds of experiments all at once. But doing that, if you have confidence in your backgrounds and all these hundreds of channels, then you have a lot of sensitivity because a given signal can overlap maybe in a very low background channel. Okay, so at some point at the end of 2010, we realized that just the standard model Higgs would eventually start to contaminate these multi-lepton searches. And so at one point, we turned it around and just used it, just the search as is, as just a search for the Higgs or a bound on the Higgs cross-section. And the reason that the Higgs ends up in multi-leptons, well, of course, there's the Higgs to four-lepton resonant channel that's a specialized channel to look for the Higgs, but there are lots of other channels here that I've listed that end up in multi-leptons. And in fact, if you add all these up, the non-resonant multi-lepton channels in magnitude actually exceed the resonant four-lepton channel. So there's actually more multi-lepton, Higgs to multi-leptons scattered through the data than there is in the Higgs to four-lepton channel. But it's spread out over many, many of these channels, but that's what these multi-lepton searches are designed to see. Signatures that are spread out over many channels, maybe, so that in each individual channel, there's really not any good sensitivity, but on the combination of all of them, then you can start to see excesses. And even just from the 7 TeV data, you can get a bound if you even if you throw out the the resonant contributions of a few times the standard model. In addition, we know, since standard model is well-defined, we know exactly the kinematics in each of these topologies. And so one can divide up the channels even further to look for special Higgs subchannels that have just, so we put boxes around just the right part in phase space, and then there's some background there, but a lot of background's gone, and we know that the Higgs signal there. So you can actually get pretty good sensitivity by using the known kinematics in all these channels. Again, that's more work to put all these channels together. But you can get sensitivity, and the results by the end that you'll see for the 8 TeV data, we will be including Higgs as a background to the multi-lepton searches. It's sort of a nuisance background. It's a similar level to some of the signals we want to see, but again, we have good control over all the kinematics. So since, in principle, we can even see the standard model Higgs, we use this also, again, to try to look for multi-lepton signals of second Higgs doublet. And so here's an example. So when we have the second Higgs doublet, here's an example for some spectrum that we looked at of all the, well, in some semi-systematic organization of all the possible production and decay topologies. It's not all of them, but I won't describe how we systematize this. But these are all the channels that could possibly contribute. So starting from, so you get this regular standard model Higgs production plus capital H and A that can cascade decay through various ways. And here we've only assumed just the standard model plus an extra Higgs doublet. Of course, this could be complicated even more if the heavy Higgs can decay to other things. And there's tons and tons of topologies here that could end up in multi-lepton. And this is exactly the sort of search that the multi-lepton search is designed to find, right? There could be all these things spread out, and you wouldn't see it in any given channel. It would be sort of futile to design a search based on the kinematics of every possible final state, and so it could show up. Right, so let me just mention that in the next slide, Dan. So of these, there are two topologies that are sort of important and interesting. One is capital H to two little h's, and the other is A to ZH, both of which have can have significant multi-lepton final states. And this is just to illustrate, in this particular topology, at some point in the parameter space, the strength of the signal. So the green, light and dark green, are the standard model Higgs signatures, and then the red and blue are additional things from the heavy Higgs and the A. And in this particular signature, the capital H is very heavy, A is not so heavy, so there's a lot of additional production from A to ZH. So you can take that, so again, we took the results from the 7 TeV search and looked for excluded regions, so the light blue is excluded region in one particular type model, type 3, where the Higgs couples to up and one Higgs couples to up and down type quarks, the other one couples to leptons. This gives more leptons. And at the time, this was, for this particular spectrum, for this particular type, this was the best bound. And since then, the bound on the measurements have gotten better, but the multi-lepton search has gotten better. So there is still some region which is probed by the multi-lepton searches for this particular spectrum. So there's some parts of the parameter space that are usefully probed in this. And the red line's the alignment limit. That's the alignment limit. Well, with hundreds of channels, of course, there's always an excess somewhere by definition. Well, it depends on what your definition of excess is. But this is a one sigma. Yeah, so we could turn it around and try to fit things, yes. And that's not kosher. We don't want to do that. This is where the little Higgs VEV lines up with the little h eigen direction. So in that case, little h, in that case, little h couples exactly like the standard model Higgs. So it's sine alpha minus beta equals 1. Well, so there's output from the, so we have all the search channels, and we simulate individually these. For this one, there's 105 topologies. So we simulate the acceptance for each topology. And then as a function of alpha, and you know, using this equation I wrote up here, so that tells you the script A. And then using alpha and beta, the cross-section in any given topology depends on alpha and beta. And then all the relevant branching ratios depend on alpha and beta. And so that's where the alpha beta dependence comes from in this plot. I think that's in the list. For some of the topologies we did. Well, here's TTA. Again, for this particular one, H is so heavy that we had some way to systematize sort of, you know, light, intermediate, heavy. And, okay. 105 topologies was enough. And my collaborators did check that some of them were infinitesimal. So that's fine. That's the results in terms of one particular model in this parameter space. But just to pull out one particular topology that's qualitatively important, which is this capital H to two little h's, here's also the bound on sigma dot br of capital H to two little h's from the same 7 TeV data set in multi-leptons. And so it's at the almost the picobarn level. And this is already an interesting, well, first, this is an interesting topology to look for. It can be open once heavy Higgs is larger than twice the little Higgs mass. For this particular plot, we just put in little h decaying like standard model, right? And that could even happen technically in the alignment limit also, because the alignment limit doesn't forbid capital H to decay to little h. That's yet another parameter. So this is sort of a model-independent bound with the assumption that you just stated about the little h couplings. And just for reference, at 350 GeV, the standard model cross-section is about 3 femtobarns. And the capital H glue-glue cross-section, it can be a little bit smaller than the standard, and then a standard model Higgs of the same mass, or a little bit bigger, depending on what part of parameter space you're in. So already, this is just starting to probe interesting parts of the parameter space. And
is there an assumption about what the Coulombian channel of collection of H is, or something like that?
No. This is just an experimental interpretation of the results. So in principle, it can be produced by anything. In practice, in the two Higgs doublet model, it's all glue-glue fusion. Yeah, for these sorts of masses, it's basically all glue-glue fusion. Okay, good. And for the acceptance here, we did assume glue-glue fusion, yes. But in principle, okay, that would change the results a little bit, but that is built into this. And again, now for the future, for this decay mode, we know exactly the kinematics where the little h, the two little h's would land. So we can do much, much better by doing focused search for this particular final state. And so eventually you'll see results for this final state.
So I'm just curious,
suppose you consider other Yeah, so here we can, well, I'll mention that a little later. Yeah, so there's other channels that I think I'll mention. Mentioned a little later, but this is just for the multi-leptons. And they're comparable, or maybe a little bit better, to answer your question, the BB gamma-gamma in particular. Okay, so next topic that came up last week that we're working on that I just wanted to mention is using the Higgs to discover new physics. So one way we're doing that is in the Higgs to gamma-gamma mode. And there the idea is that And so we now know we have a resonance at 126 approximately. And so one can go in the diphoton mass spectrum and go on the resonance and know for sure that this resonance is there in that data set, and go off the resonance and know that it's with high confidence that it's not there. Okay, that dominant resonance is not there. And so then one can look as a function of other things in the event And so we've cut things up. I have one, just one example here to show you. We've cut things up in terms of all the standard Blunt variables, ST, MET, HT. We've binned things, a number of jets, number of leptons, whether there's B tags, whether there's a B tag that makes a consistent with a Higgs, and so forth. So if anybody has any suggestions for how to further cut things up, please let me know. But I think we've cut things up pretty specifically. There could be some new physics model that spits out the Higgs and some other things, and it's so specific, the kinematics of the extra stuff is so specific, it might be worth looking at. So if people have models like that, let me know, and maybe we could look for that. But the general idea here is that you use nature to do the background calculations for you in the sidebands. The simplest way to describe it is just average the sidebands, and then look at some other variables. So here I've done some example of ST, which is the scalar sum PT of all the identified objects in the event. And so you can look in the sidebands and on the resonance. So on the resonance, of course, there's a standard model Higgs signal. So all you really have to rely on is that you can model the standard model Higgs signal in this extra variable well. And that can be done pretty well for the standard model Higgs. And so here in the blue is the sideband. This is a simulation. But again, in data, we know exactly what that is from that we let nature do the calculation in the sideband. The red is the expectation in the resonance if it's just standard model Higgs. And then here's some simulated data with 15 inverse femtobarns of stop pair production. So this is a fairly large cross section. This particular thing here, since it has Goldsteinos and it has missing energy, and this simulation is over a year old by now, so it's been ruled out since then. But you could easily hide things if it only decayed into jets. So, for example, if we had hadronic R parity violation or something, it would still be well hidden. It's a fraction of the Higgs signal in the resonance in the inclusive search, so it wouldn't really necessarily show up as a huge deviation. And by looking even in this most blunt variable, we could still see an excess in the tail. Yeah.
How is charge conservation working there?
Where? Oh, but the Higgsinos are doublets, and so they can emit extra charge. There's a small splitting that they can spit out. So between the Higgsino that goes with the B and then the second Higgsino that goes to H, there's additional decays that I haven't written.
Right.
Well, for this particular one, it's zero. Yeah. This is just we have lots of different benchmarks. I picked the biggest one because the deviation's biggest. So this is one way that we're looking for Higgs in association with new physics. And there should be some pretty sensitive results by the end of the run to show. Well, all of this particular signal lands in the red bin. And then the question just is how much of this bump is standard model and how much is something else? And so we're just adding extra directions here, many, many, many different dimensions that help us distinguish how much of that is standard model versus other stuff, like that. Well, if you mean the fit to the background, well, but again, the signal lands all in here. Okay. I think we're not taking that into account, and I think that's a small effect. So, but again, we don't really care about this normalization so much. It's just looking here versus here. Another thing also you can use that's using gamma-gamma decay modes. You can also use the multi-lepton decay modes of the Higgs to search for extra things. So one thing we did was to look, again, using the 7TeV multi-lepton data for top-to-charm Higgs. So this is an allowed but rare, super, super rare decay in the standard model. It's JIM suppressed and suppressed by second, third generation mixing. So if it's standard model value, it will never be seen ever by humans, ever. So seeing any evidence for this or anything consistent with this would be new physics, of course. And so here the idea was that the TT bar production cross section is very large. And if one of the tops decayed in this rare way, flavor changing way, then it would show up in the multi-lepton search. And so we get an order percent level bound just from the published data. And again, we understand the kinematics of this exactly, and so we can go in and make a box for this particular kinematics that focus on this particular thing, and so we should be able to get this down below the percent level with ATV data. Next topic is using the rate measurements as precision probes. So we all are very familiar with the electroweak measurements, so measurements of G Fermi, the MWMZ, the Z properties at LEP, all can be put together into a very precision tests of the renormalizable standard model. And to parameterize deviations from the normalizable standard model, you can do an effective operator analysis. And so as you all know, at dimension 6, there are only two operators that contribute to the standard precision electroweak measurements, the S and the T operator. So how does the Higgs have an impact on this, Higgs observables? Well, even just the rate observables can have an impact because, in principle, they're sensitive to high-dimension operators. And so if we think about what the best possible channels experimentally are, well, those are the ones with a resonant final state because there you can be most confident that you see the Higgs. And so that's the gamma-gamma and Z, for the moment, gamma-gamma and ZZ channels. And of those, measuring ratios reduces the experimental systematics. So for example, if you take this specific ratio of gamma-gamma to ZZ, the theory uncertainty in the cross-section to good approximation drops out, luminosity uncertainty, and so forth. Okay. So of all the combinations of rate measurements, this is the best one that's measured, the ratio of gamma-gamma to ZZ for these reasons, and that probably will persist into the asymptotic future, that this will always be the best combination of any rate measurements to be measured. Okay, so in this framework that we think about non-standard model Higgs plus non-renormalizable operators to parameterize deviations, then what is the impact on this single best measured, will be best measured thing? Well, the gamma-gamma is a loop process and the ZZ is tree level. So to leading order, if we put in small operators, they'll affect to leading order just the gamma-gamma and not the ZZ. So if you look at all dimension 6 operators and ask to leading order in this expansion I've written here what the effect is on this, then there are three operators that contribute. It's just the kinetic terms for the SU2 and U1 gauge fields modified by the Higgs strength and the S operator. And the T operator does not contribute to this at leading order in this expansion. Okay, so let's just see numerically. So that's rather simple, trivial observation, but let's just see numerically how interesting this is. So here is just from precision electroweak, S12 is the standard S parameter in the usual Peskin-Takeuchi normalization that you're all familiar with. And so the measurements that have gone in over the decades to all the precision electroweak are consistent with zero with an uncertainty of about 0.1 at one sigma in S. And so now the measurements from the HCP combined analysis. And so what was done on request was to do a fit to the gamma-gamma and glu-glu couplings, which again, to leading order in this expansion, would be the things that are modified first. And actually, if you did the whole thing, it actually wouldn't change this very much, but technically that was what was done. And this particular observable is sensitive to both S12, the standard S parameter, and in some linear combination of these two that don't appear in a precision electroweak. And that's the current bound. And the thing to observe is that this observable bounds things along the diagonal. And so already you can see that given that this ellipse is a little bit flat, the measurements already are in magnitude a little bit better than all the precision electroweak put together in that particular direction. And this is just using the combined fits. So I think they fixed it to 126. I'm not sure. But that's true. But of course, it's only logarithmically sensitive to the Higgs mass. Yeah, and that would, so what that would, and in fact, if you did that, it would get a little bit more narrow in this direction. So the standard, this S is, I mean, now that we know the Higgs mass, the standard electroweak, precision electroweak, MH, is not an uncertainty anymore. It's just a fixed thing. But that has a really tiny effect. But it is there. Yeah. And so, of course, I'm sure people will redo the precision electroweak fits. And when you do that, that can be added. It'll squeeze it a little bit in that direction. So with a couple hundred inverse femtobarns, we estimate you could probably do at least a 5% measurement of this. And so if everything was consistent with standard model, that's what it would look like. So asymptotically, it's going to squeeze down. And these Higgs diboson final state rate measurements are going to become the new precision electroweak physics that in magnitude are going to be better than the other combined precision electroweak, which, as I said, now won't asymptotically. The Higgs measurements have a little impact on that, but not very much. And the last thing is that the that's just one linear combination. There's three operators here. And the last linear combination can be fixed by Z gamma. So eventually Z gamma will begin. Once there's a measurement, that'll start to contribute. And so then all of the oblique dimension 6 operators will be bounded. So two linear combinations by precision electroweak and two by Higgs diboson decays. So again, that's kind of a trivial observation, but it is kind of cool that just past the discovery level, because it's a loop process, the Higgs is going to give us, is starting to give us already interesting information about precision electroweak. In the interest of time, I have one more topic that I can discuss. And so I think I'll skip this discussion of the full kinematic characterization of the Higgs to 4 lepton phase space and just tell you one, or just show you one result for this. There's lots, as most of you know, there's lots of interesting information in this phase space that could come from new physics. But it turns out that when you do a systematic enumerization of the phase space physically, that all the interesting information is hidden in variables that are sort of marginally irrelevant, that become irrelevant in a particular limit, a threshold phase space limit. So that doesn't mean you can't get information out. It's just that it's hidden there in relatively subtle ways. So one way to try to get at that information, and what we've been focusing so far, discussion has been mostly on discriminating discrete possibilities, like the spin or the parity of the Higgs. And that's fine. But of course, once those straw men are eliminated and it's established it's a spin zero, basically it's pretty much the Higgs, the interesting question will come from interference of any modifications of the Higgs couplings with the dominant standard model Higgs couplings. And so for these interference effects, you can focus on exactly what type of interference is going on to try to extract maximally the information that's hidden in all these sort of marginally irrelevant variables. So what I'll show you is time reversal violation. And so there, if the Higgs ZZ coupling had both a T even and T odd component, namely it coupled both like a scalar and a pseudoscalar, then in the rate, in an observable, the interference between those two would be odd under time reversal violation. And so you should look for an observable that's odd under time reversal violation, and that will be by definition sensitive to the leading interference effects, assuming that the pseudoscalar's component is small. Okay, so with just four, so just using, again, if it's scalar, all you get to use are the decay variables. And since we don't measure spin directly, we only measure the four vectors in the final state, there's a unique observable made out of just four vectors that's T odd, and that's just contracted with a completely anti-symmetric epsilon symbol. So any T violating observable has to be proportional to this variable. Okay. So here's a simulation. Let's just look at the plot on the right at first. And tau, the blue thing, is this simple T odd observable that I had. I didn't write the equation, but it was on the last slide. And this is with some nearly maximal interference between the scalar and the pseudoscalar. So there should be a big asymmetry. And I should say, the other thing that's nice about this variable is that the distribution of this variable, if there's any interference, will be odd. Okay, so the total number of events with this variable plus, minus, minus, will be non-zero. So it's just it's an asymmetry measurement. And that's a nice way to package any measurement into an asymmetry measurement. Okay, but it turns out that although it's there, you can't see the asymmetry by eye. And it's because, I didn't do what I said about the interference. And so what you can do is you can actually look literally at the interference term, the kinematics of the interference term between the scalar and the pseudoscalar. And so my student Michael Park calculated that very carefully. And it turns out that the interference term is, of course, it has to be proportional to this, but it's multiplied by some particular combination of kinematic variables. And so then if you look at that variable, I mean, that's the thing literally that's in the interference. So the idea is you look at just the kinematic structure in the interference term. That, by definition, maximizes the effect. And that's the green plot. And so there you can see the asymmetry by eye. Now, so that's very interesting. That's an interesting sort of qualitative measurement that should be done on Higgs decays. It's a simple asymmetry measurement, and it probes for this T violation in decays. But as there was some discussion last week, if you take, I didn't mention it, of course, here are the operators. It's just the T violating, P and T violating friends of the other oblique operators if we do an effective field theory analysis. And so these could be inserted into EDMs, and they'll induce EDMs. So you can ask, given the bounds on EDMs, how interesting is this measurement? And unfortunately, it will take way, 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 way more integrated luminosity than we will ever have to make this measurement. But with a few inverse Attobarns, it'll be possible to make this asymmetry measurement probably at the few percent level. So just as an experimental measurement, it'll be an interesting precision measurement. It's literally complementary. It's complementary to the EDM measurements because EDM measurements, it turns out, are not directly sensitive to the HZZ coupling. They're sensitive to HZ gamma and H gamma gamma. But if you assume that these operators would all be generated at roughly the equal rate without some enormous coincidence that there's some particular linear combination that didn't show up in the EDMs but would show up here, unfortunately, we won't ever see anything. But that's the way it is. Right. Right. Yes. And then this is if it's 0.1, it's too small. Notice that this is 250. Okay. So that's too small also, yes. So unfortunately, yeah. So, but the EDM would already be blown away if the equivalent S were 0.1. It's a little bit smaller than that, but not a lot smaller. So the EDMs are just such good measurements that, I see that. Okay. Let's see. And the next step is to go on to test the Higgs mechanism. We can do something similar, not just for the T-odd piece, but the other piece that would couple with the T-even guys here that I talked about that are bounded in the rate measurement. So you could also look for interference effects in the distributions. And so we know what the precise interfering kinematic variable is. And so that's in progress. Yeah. Oh, this is just meant to be some arbitrary coefficient. Yeah, that's all. Well, actually, so I normalized. So in this plot here, I normalized it the same way, just because you're a little bit calibrated, like how we noticed for S. And so this would be this S twiddle like 250. So it's enormous. Yeah, it's almost maximal. So again, it's unfortunate. It's a really cool measurement. It should be done. But I personally have no expectation that it'll show a deviation. So okay. It is a cool asymmetry measurement. OK, I think I'll skip, because it would only probably just be the experimentalists interested in a new technique we came up with for reconstructing the Higgs mass in the WW channel, invisible L opposite sign dilepton plus MET channel. This can also be used for searching for extra Higgses in the W channel. So if anybody's interested, you can ask me about this privately. And I'll just stop with This, I just wanted to show one new result from the CMS multi-lepton search. So we're at the point now where we're sensitive to rare decay modes of electroweakly produced objects. So in SUSY, say pair production of, in this case, higgs-enos. So here's an example of a bound that we got from the multi-lepton search with higgs-eno pair production. And then Carlos can't ask about charge conservation. The answer is the same as before. That decays to two Zs and a Goldsteino, and then each Z decays to two leptons. So it's an extremely rare mode. But that's in a very low background channel, four leptons. And there's missing energy. And so we have very good control over the missing energy, in particular in four leptons. So we developed some new methods for parametrizing the MET as a function of the pileup and the HT in the event. And so this is the mass of one of the dilepton pairs as a function of the MET. So there's various categories, and everything's quite consistent with the standard model production with no extra MET. And so that gives us this bound on direct higgs-eno production with this particular topology. So now for SUSY and some of these things for second Higgs doublets, we're now, so we've been sensitive to WZ for quite a while. We're now sensitive to ZZ in this mode. We also now have sensitivity to WH with the multi-lepton decay modes of the H and the diphoton decay modes of the H. We'll soon have ZH sensitivity, and HH, well, with weak production, it's going to be kind of borderline. But with stronger production or larger production, like from capital H, even at the level a few hundred femtobar in cross section, we might be able to get that. Again, all these things we know understand the kinematics and the final states very well. So we have additional handles that we can apply to that. And so expect to see some results in final states, including Higgs's, with the full data set from 8TeV eventually. And okay, I'll just stop with that. So there are these ongoing searches for extended Higgs sectors in the standard channels. We're now using Higgs to search for new physics in various channels. We've already started to probe for flavor violations. Anytime there's a new system, violating flavors, symmetries are the easiest things to look for. There's these diboson, just the rate measurement physics will complement and surpass, as I showed, the existing precision electroweak. We'll be able to do pretty precision tests of the Higgs mechanism and even search for the extended Higgs sectors in these new channels that I mentioned. So there's plenty to come, and there's lots of stuff to do. So if anybody has any comments for me, I'd be glad to take them offline.
Okay.